The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Yes, it is, and welcome back. As a lot of us have been getting information and lining up behind different candidates for office in particularly the Republican primaries, one of the races we haven't focused on, and it's an important one, is that for the Attorney General for the state of Arizona. The current Attorney General, Mark Brnovich, is termed out of office, is leaving office. So that leaves an open seat, an open race for 2022. On the Republican side, several people are running for office, for that office. And I wanted to start focusing on that race a little bit, as so many people have been asking me if I would do my best to highlight the differences between the various candidacies and candidates. And I'm happy to do so as we start on this process with Abraham Hamadeh, H-A-M-A-D-E-H. He is a Republican running for Attorney General. His website is Abe for A-G. That's Abe, A-B-E-F-O-R-A-G, abeforag.com. Mr. Hamadeh, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Seth. I appreciate it. You can call me Abe.
Abe, thank you. I will. Abe, tell the audience, first-time guests, I do this with everyone, a little bit about yourself, how you grew up, how you came to be doing what you're doing, and why you're doing what you're planning to do next.
Sure, Seth. I think in order to get to know me, you first have to understand my family. So my family, you know, they're from Syria, so I'm the son of Syrian immigrants, and it's the quintessential American dream story, you know. If, you know, my parents came here with no education, no money. We were on food stamps and slowly rose our way to the top. And I credit a lot of that to, you know, Arizona's entrepreneurial spirit, but, you know, not just my parents, but my brother is a very successful real estate investor and developer in town. And my sister, she settled with her family and raised her kids with her husband, who's a NBA player and champion. So all around, the American dream come true. And then here I am. I went to ASU for undergrad and University of Arizona for law school. And after that, I was a prosecutor at the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, where I prosecuted felony crimes, and my jurisdiction was the downtown Phoenix area. Mm-hmm. But also, I'm currently an Army captain and intelligence officer, and I just returned from a 14-month-long deployment to Saudi Arabia. I came back in September. But while I was out there in Saudi Arabia, a really interesting country, Seth, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but they're a very transitioning country. But I was in charge of setting up all the training for the Saudi domestic security forces internally in Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. as well as sending Saudi domestic troops to Ranger school training and Navy SEAL school training and all sorts of other Army school training. But it was very interesting because we had to deal with the fallout of the 2019 Pensacola terrorist attack.
I don't know if you remember, of course. Yes, absolutely.
So obviously very tragic, where three sailors got killed by a Saudi lieutenant, actually a pilot. Mm-hmm. So we had to deal with the fall. You know, a lot of that kind of got under, you know, it got swept under the rug a little bit because there was so much going on. That was mm-hmm. December 2019, and then you had COVID come on. But when I went there, we had to implement all of the new policies, which were enhanced security vetting, which was pretty, you know, strenuous, where we had to implement biometrics on them and do background investigations. And that was all in direct response to the terrorist attack, and I actually led the implementation of that for Saudi Arabia, which then got implemented worldwide. And it was interesting because Saudi Arabia, which I don't think a lot of, I didn't know at the time, but it's their number one purchaser of all U.S. military sales mm-hmm. equipment in the world. Mm-hmm. There's currently $130 billion in active foreign military sales. So it's not like in Iraq or Afghanistan where we can dictate to them a lot of these things. We kind of have to come to a mutual understanding. So there's a lot of diplomacy involved with it. But yeah, that was what I was doing for the past year and a half, basically, when I was overseas on my deployment.
By the way, before I go further, thank you for your service, and I'm glad you pointed it out, Abe. Talk to me a little bit about something you just said there. We'll return to the AG's race in a moment, but just coming off a foreign policy segment, talk to me a little bit about the what you said about the changing culture or politics of Saudi Arabia. I've heard tale of a lot of this. I've been a hefty critic, to put it no less, to put it no higher, I suppose, of the Saudi regime. But I have also been reading over the last couple of years that a little bit of light has been shining in there, and there have been some cracks in the obdurateness of that regime. That's what you saw as well?
Yes, Seth. I think I would have probably, you know, agreed with you on I was a big critic of the Saudi government for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do think the Crown Prince MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, has been doing a very good job. And I credit that to actually Donald Trump's relationship with him. That was the first country Donald Trump visited as president.
Mm-hmm.
But they got rid of all the religious police. They're no longer, you know, draconian in that regard.
That old committee of virtue that used to go around whipping people, that's done.
Yeah, that is. I mean, I would have gotten whipped a lot if they were still there. I bet. So they're no longer there. It's just a changing country. They're, you know, I was there when the Abraham Accords, which was the Donald Trump's initiative, the peace initiative between the UAE, Bahrain, Israel, you know, making peace with Israel finally, and talking to some of the Saudis. I'm certain Saudi Arabia is going to sign on to the Abraham Accords, you know, very, very shortly.
Well, that would be an earthquake, wouldn't it? That would be an earthquake in the Middle East.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, especially because it's such a big country.
Yeah.
And, you know, you usually be the rest of the Middle East.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think those Abraham Accords, they got too short of a shrift, quite honestly. I think that they were monumentally changing to the region. And I don't think enough credit was given for the efforts of Donald Trump, for the efforts of Saudi Arabia's pressure on those smaller emirates. But it was a big damn deal. It really was. And when you see some of these countries even welcoming, first of all, allowing Israeli flights, much less welcoming Israeli dignitaries, that changes a lot in the Middle East, doesn't it? It really does.
Oh, completely. I mean, Donald Trump didn't get a credit for a lot of good things he's done, but I mean, that is shocking that he was able to move Jerusalem, make Jerusalem the capital of Israel, and move the embassy there. So he didn't get a credit for a lot, but that was monumental, and it really did get lost over the past year.
Fascinating background. We're talking to Abraham Hamadeh, Hamadeh, abeforag.com, abeforag.com is his website, because he's running for attorney general here in Arizona. We, along with 40-plus other states, elect our attorney general. Abe, tell me about why you decided to run and what you want to do with that office.
You know, honestly, Seth, when I thought about this back, you know, so I want to take you back to March 2020 with all the shutdowns going on. You know, everybody's at their homes. There's quarantine. Businesses were shut down. But retail chain stores were kept open. Yeah, it was a scary time for me, and I left in July 2020, and I was really worried for the direction of our country. I mean, I remember being at Scottsdale Fashion Square, literally right at the waterfront, when the rioting and looting were going on back in the summer last year. It really worried me. And then fast forward from when I left July 2020 to when I got back in September of this year, 14 months, you know, I came back to a country I no longer recognize.
Mm.
And it's terrifying at the rate of acceleration the Biden-Harris administration has been going at eroding our constitutional liberties and how quickly us Americans have given them up in time of panic. And you know, something you realize when you've traveled the world like I have is, you know, there's nowhere else on the planet that we can replicate America. And if our freedoms get lost here, there's nowhere else to go. I mean, we're seeing what they're doing in Australia right now, and, you know, it's terrifying. But luckily, we've avoided that. And I do credit the Second Amendment, luckily. But, you know, primarily why I'm running because I'm not going to have our generation be known as the ones who lost this country. We're going to be known as the generation that saved America. And honestly, I took a hard look at this race and who was running in this race because, you know, there's all these crowded field. There's five others.
Yeah, this may be one of the more crowded fields for a Republican race, I think. It might be the most. Yeah,
I think so. There's six candidates with me. But to me, they just represented the same old revolving door of failed candidates and insiders who represent business as usual. So, you know, I decided to jump in. And since I announced on November 1st, we raised over $100,000 in 7 days, which I think kind of shocked a lot of people. And I think it just shows the need that people wanted something new. So I think we need new blood, and that's why I'm running.
I want to go through some of the issues on your website, which is fantastic, by the way. I want to recommend it for people, abeforag.com. You can see him on election, border security, cancel culture, Second Amendment. But let's go back to what you said stuck in your head so much, when you were at Fashion Square. I have a break I got to take. Are you good to stay for a little bit with me?
Absolutely.
When we come back from the break, I'd love to talk to you about how you envisioned those riots as they happened here and across the rest of the country, because I'm finding across the rest of the country today there seems to be tremendous amnesia about what took place a year ago. And I think part of it is, Abe, and I'll ask you to weigh in on this when we come back, I think part of that amnesia is consequent of too many elected political leaders not saying what they truly thought and feeling that they had to bow to the crowd like university presidents or something. Can we talk about that when we come back?
Love to.
I'm Seth Leibson. He's Abraham Hamaday, running for AG in Arizona, Attorney General. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Our guest is Abraham Hamaday. He is running for Attorney General in Arizona. AbeForAG.com is his website. Abe, if I may, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about something you said regarding the riots of last year. You were in Scottsdale near Fashion Square when they started here. And it seems a lot of people seem to have forgotten about them if they ever knew about them. Quite frankly, and I think part of that is a cowardice, actually, of so many political and elected leaders and officials not willing to call these riots out for what they were, in the first instance, inexcusable. And I would love to get your thoughts on all of that, the animating energy behind the riots, and what I think was the pusillanimous response from too many elected officials.
Right, Seth. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head right there with the word cowardly. At a time when you're seeing the riots and looting going on across the country, you know, where were our leaders? They're changing their profile photos to some black square or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to say solidarity, but there wasn't leadership at the time to say, hey, rioting and looting is not protest. And you can be against those things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like everybody took advantage of the situation, and you thought our city's on fire, and it was total lawlessness. Even our police, they were handicapped, right? Because then you had these elected officials calling to defund our police.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what's even worse than defunding our police? They really demoralized
mm-hmm. A lot of police chiefs resigned. Yeah, I'm thinking of Carmen Best in Seattle, a black African-American
right.
woman, right? Head of the police.
Right. And there's, you know, the black Americans actually make up the police at a higher percentage than their population.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really sad to see in a time when, you know, I remember 9/11 as a kid, and, you know, we used to really respect our police officers
yep.
and our first response.
Yep.
And now it's turned into that we can spit on them, we could, you know, tear them apart. It's horrible. And it's, you know, a tough profession that they're dealing with.
And we have professional athletes calling them pigs and racists and wearing clothing as such and being honored.
Oh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seth, you know what's crazy is in the Army, right, we wear one uniform, we have one national anthem, and we have one flag.
Mm-hmm.
I come back and I turn on the NFL, and everything is about race.
Mm-hmm.
And they got a black national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like they're trying to divide us by race.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really scary what's going on. And I want to reclaim that sentiment that we, you know, the e pluribus unum, out of many, one. And this is what we are. We're Americans first. And it doesn't, so I love the military. It's the great equalizer. Doesn't matter if you're black, brown, white, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, you're all in it together, just, you know, fighting for the red, white, and blue.
Well, one of the interesting things, if I can connect two thoughts or at least attempt to, Abe, is that position with what you said earlier in your own biography and autobiography, that you lived the American dream. You came here in a situation that sounded honestly very much like the new lieutenant governor of Virginia, Winsome Sears, very little money in the pocket, even a little bit of welfare. But then you came to achieve the highest stations in this country because this country affords that. And it seems to me the difference between that narrative and the rioting we took place is the difference of two views of America, whether America is a place that is stymied by systemic racism, or whether America is a place that actually is committed to the idea that if you keep your nose clean and watch your own side of the street, there is nothing that can keep you down here. It sounds to me like you obtain with the second. But what do you say to people who believe in the first? What do you say to people who think that this is a country of woe and misery and systemic racism?
I think they need to open their eyes. This country has lifted so many people out of poverty, has embraced every single nationality on the face of this earth. The United States is the least racist country in the entire world. And I've traveled the world, right? I mean, most other countries are very homogenous. The United States, the melting pot. So I don't know where they're getting this idea from other than they're being indoctrinated, mm-hmm. right? I mean, yeah. There's polling out right now that some Americans think that racism is worse now than it was in the 1950s
yeah.
and 60s.
Yeah.
And it's just historically untrue, and it's devoid of any fact. So, it's something that we've got to stand strong on, and I love Candace Owens, and she's been doing a great job in fighting that battle. And, it's a lot easier for people like me, to stand up and, call out against this racism going on, because they have a harder time calling me racist, even though they still will. But
you could easily be, though. You could easily be the new brown face of white supremacy, as they did to Larry Elder, right? It doesn't matter. The left doesn't care in that respect, right? They called him the black face of white supremacy because his ideas didn't comport with what they thought should be racially racially indicative thinking. Abe, let me do a second thing with you on all of this that's transpired and is new to America over the last couple of years. You mentioned COVID and the mandates. I'd like to get your thoughts on that as a candidate for attorney general. So the governor signed a law banning vaccine mandates and other things in our school system. The Supreme Court of the state said that they log rolled too much of it and they couldn't sustain it. As our attorney general, if you are our attorney general, how will you approach the issue of mask and vaccine mandates for our children?
Right. Well, when I'm attorney general, I believe in medical freedom stuff. So, and it's not just something that, we have to go on. What's really sad is that we have to distrust our Republican leadership sometimes too, because don't forget the COVID shutdowns were under Republican leadership. But this is where the attorney general has really the bully pulpit, as well as we have the ability to sue without the governor. So God forbid we've got a Democratic governor and we could sue the federal government, or we could even sue it in the state court. So this is something that's really near and dear to me, is not to to prevent the vaccine mandates from taking effect. And I think what we've seen successfully in other states, like Texas now, is successfully fought back the OSHA mandate that was coming on from the Biden administration on employees over 100. But that is something I'm going to vigorously fight the federal government. It seems like, what I intend to do when I'm attorney general is I want the Biden-Harris administration to open up a separate Arizona unit at the DOJ, because we're going to do that. That's just going to be my philosophy of the office. I mean, I'm no longer going to sit back and play defense. We got to go on offense in November, and when I'm elected, that's what we're going to do. We're not going to play by their rules. What we've seen when they do by their rules, they change the rules. And no, we're going to go on offense. We're going to fight back.
I appreciate that. Nicely stated. We're talking to Abraham Hamadeh. He is running for attorney general here in Arizona. AbeForAG.com. I've got to take another commercial break. When we come back, can we talk a little bit about your views on a couple things on your website that I know are positions that much of our audience cares a great deal about? Border security, cancel culture, and the Second Amendment. Can we talk about all of that when we come back?
Absolutely.
I'm speaking with Abraham Hamadeh. He is a candidate for AG, and we will be right back. The Republican line, and he is doing his first interview with us, as we will be interviewing all the candidates for attorney general in due course. Your website, Abraham, Abe for AG, it's got all the hot button issues that are on the minds of our listeners. Love to talk to you about some of them. We've already done a few. Talk to me about me and the audience about your views on border security right now, if you don't mind.
Sure, Seth. You know, I feel like border security every election cycle just keeps getting brought up, and I'm shocked that we haven't had a real chance securing it. Still, I think the best shot we had was under Donald Trump, and you know, he got a lot of the wall finished, but now a lot of pieces of the wall are just sitting down there and not being constructed. So it's really disappointing to see how the Biden-Harris administration has not finished building the wall. But, you know, I think that Attorney General, the place that we have, because it's not just federal domain. Don't let the people fool you to think this is just the federal government's responsibility. Arizona leaders have responsibility to protect Arizonans from an invasion coming from the south. So I think this is where, you know, the Arizona Attorney General, along with the Republican governor, can team up. And what's happening in Texas with Operation Lone Star, it's going pretty good out there with the Attorney General Ken Paxton and Greg Abbott. But they've been prosecuting some illegal immigrants as trespassers, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Arizona presents a little bit of a challenge because so much of our border is actually on federal land or Native American land. But there are, you know, parts of that are privately owned land or that are owned by the state. So it's, you know, we just got to get creative in how we're going to tackle the border crisis. But and it is something that I do want to also revamp a sheriff's posse. We can have all the county sheriff's posses go down to the border and actually set up a security force down there, or even enacting the state guard, not just the National Guard. I don't think people realize Jan Brewer back 10 years ago signed legislation that the governor can actually activate a state guard, which we have not done. But in that case, we would, you know, have the state guard go down there and actually set up patrols along with our National Guard even.
Talk to me a little bit, too, about some of the worst things that happen as a result of not having a safe and secure border. In and of itself, it's an important thing. Every nation has one or needs one or says they do, except this one for some reason. But what we get from not having one is obviously all the immigration issues that flood our zone. But beyond that, more immediately, a lot of crime, a lot of substance use, a lot of trafficking, and in fact, such substance abuse problems, drug addiction problems, that we now see tremendous increases in youth use of illegal and dangerous substances. Would you address yourself to all of that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely, Seth. I mean, you know, I think people might forget, but just a few years ago in Ahwatukee, right in our suburbs, there was a massive shootout between the drug cartels and the DEA, right? And actually, Arizonans and the Kansas sheriffs were actually kept away from that for a while. But you know, I don't think people realize that the drug cartels have invaded our suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a border town issue.
That's
this
right.
has gone all the way up to Phoenix, to Flagstaff, to Prescott. It's all over. And the opioid crisis has gotten much worse. And you know, the drugs they're bringing in, it's not pharmaceutical grade. They're very potent. And it's something that the Attorney General definitely has to take a hard stance on. So as Attorney General, we're going to fight back against these cartels, and we can't be afraid of them. But it's something that the border crime, it's not a local issue. This is a huge issue. As I talk to Arizonans across the state, it affects all sorts of crimes, not just drug crimes. I mean, they're even just organized retail theft. You know, a lot of these crimes that are occurring in cities across the country where they're stealing from CVS's and all this, you know, a lot of them are actually very orchestrated crimes, and a lot of them have ties to drug cartels as well. And that's something, as Attorney General, we're going to vigorously prosecute. And we just saw in the legislature this year, they actually enacted an organized retail theft unit to be created at the Attorney General's office. And so the Attorney General will now focus on prosecuting those crimes, which is going to be very important since a lot of the counties have, you know, lost a lot of funding and they just don't have the bandwidth to prosecute them anymore. But we're going to take an all-hands approach on attacking the drug cartels and the border crime issues that are flooding Arizona.
Another issue that it's probably one of the first questions you're asked about in your events and at your speeches, and it has to do with Americans and Arizonans' concern about the Second Amendment. A friend of mine likes to put it this way. We're going to a break. I'll have you answer this on the way, when we come back. I'll just leave it with this as a thought piece. A friend of mine likes to put it this way. She says what Californians call an arsenal, we call a collection here in Arizona. Would you talk to us about the Second Amendment on the other side of this break, if you don't mind? Our guest is Abraham Hamadeh. He is running for Attorney General here in the state of Arizona. Abe, A-B-E, 4, F-O-R-A-G .com. I don't spell it because I don't think you can't spell. I spell it because a lot of people sometimes use the number instead of the lettering for the word for. Abe, F-O-R-A-G .com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Abraham Hamadeh has been our guest. He's a Republican running for the office of Attorney General here in Arizona. Abe, thanks for staying with us. I know this is on the minds of our audience. I'm sure it comes up in every event you're at. But talk to us about the Second Amendment. It's an interesting thing because you're running for law enforcement, and then at the same time, that involves an element of enforcing the law against violent activity, but also upholding what we know as our Second Amendment rights. Would you speak to all that for us?
Absolutely, Seth. I mean, the Second Amendment is so sacred, and I truly believe that no other amendment is as important with the Second Amendment, because without it, no other right is secured. But besides just the constitutionality of the Second Amendment, we're looking at the rising crime rates in this country. I mean, it's awful. Phoenix PD is down hundreds, if not thousands, of police officers. We're seeing homicide rates skyrocketing. We're seeing police calls taking longer. We're seeing our border communities having to take matters into their own hands, you know, trying to protect their families and their property because the, you know, there's no longer law enforcement occurring on the border. So, you know, the Second Amendment is so paramount to a free society. And I saw it firsthand when I was in Saudi Arabia, Seth. I mean, you go to some of these more authoritarian governments, the first thing they would do is get rid of the gun, right? And, you know, for me, well, you know, working with their security force is a little different, but, you know, they, you know, shootings, you know, G-35 or MP5, but out there, you see the society. I mean, they don't have as much freedom, and a big part of that is because they don't have the gun. Obviously, the Second Amendment is such an important part, and I'm glad to be in a very constitutional-friendly state of Arizona with high regards for our Second Amendment.
It's a funny thing. It's funny is exactly the wrong word. I shouldn't have started the sentence that way. It's a sad thing. It's a sad thing in a society where all of this, Second Amendment rights, First Amendment rights, and then I don't know if you want to throw in maybe the 14th Amendment if you need to, but the race issue keeps getting so exploited in cases that really should have nothing to do with that sort of thing. I'm thinking of the fallout of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Were you surprised by how much race was grafted onto that, by how much nonsense about gun rights and long rifles and short rifles and guns in state, guns out of state, how much all of that was thrown into the media mix and discussion of that case?
Right. And it goes back to what you were talking about, you know, leaders being cowardly.
Yeah.
And that whole case was a complete sham. It was a political circus. You know, as a prosecutor, a former prosecutor, I was offended at the prosecution team out there. They had no idea what they were doing. This case should have never been indicted. You know, it should have never gone to a grand jury. Any prosecution who had saw the evidence at the time would have never brought that to a grand jury for an indictment. You know, and for the fact that they had to put this poor kid through the horrors of trial. I mean, it's really sad what they've done to him. You know, he was 17 at the time, now he's 18 or so.
That's what the world can do now, right? I mean, this is a big danger. And maybe the AG needs to open up an office of individual character protection, right? When the media wants to get you, they can ruin you for life, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see it all across the cancel culture. Once they have a narrative that they want to try to stick to, they're going to fight tooth and nail to keep it. Look at the whole COVID restrictions,
right?
You know, the Wuhan lab theory, when they have, you know, big tech censoring that it came from a Wuhan lab, and now all of a sudden, most likely it did come from that. And that's the whole idea of the First Amendment. It's there. You can say whatever you want to say, controversial, non-controversial things, but you have an open dialogue and debate. But when you have big tech censoring, like they censored the President of the United States, Donald Trump, how on earth does he not have a platform on Twitter or any of Facebook or any of these other platforms, but the Taliban does?
Yeah.
You know, think about that.
Yeah, it's no, so think about that. The Supreme Leader of Iran does. The communists in America and at ASU do. David Duke does. But Donald Trump does not. You know, Louis Farrakhan does, but Donald Trump does not. No.
No, and all these companies, you know, not just big tech, but a lot of these other companies like Nike or even the NBA, they built their successes off the United States, and they openly are hostile to it, but then capitulate to anything that China does. And it's offensive, and we should be investigating them in Arizona whenever they open up factories to ensure that they're actually abiding the constitutional, protecting constitutional rights of Americans. And it's really offensive what's going on, and I don't think Americans are going to tolerate it anymore.
Abraham, you've been generous with your time. I appreciate you joining us. Last question for you. Would you ever shut down schools, synagogues, churches, mosques, and enforce the shutting of those down in the name of a virus?
Never.
Thank you, Abe. Thank you for your time. Abraham Hamadeh. ABEFORAG is his website, and this is the first in our installments of candidates running for attorney general here in Arizona. It's, as we mentioned, a pretty crowded race, and I would love us to be the one-stop shop for you to make up your minds. We'll start there, and now we will move on to the other candidates as we go forward. Again, thank you for your time, Mr. Hamadeh, and even more importantly, thank you for your service to this country. I'm Seth Liebson. How much more time do I have, Bill, here? Do I have? Good. Yeah. Let me just say I'll finish the show with some concluding thoughts, circling back to what we were saying about the bonfire of the vanities that came out of Wisconsin just over the weekend as a result of everyone on the left, including our current Secretary of State, getting things exactly wrong. Getting things exactly wrong. It's a sad thing because the courtroom and the Court of Justice, and particularly when it came to criminal law, comes to criminal law, as we were taught as children, was supposed to be the place where politics was to be absent. There would be a vacuum from politics in the courtroom. That has not happened, at least where it does happen. It's a shame on the political leaders of this country, as well as the journalistic class, to ensure that politics dominates the downwash and the after effects, and in its wake, happily moves on to their next crisis to exploit, while the rest of us have to deal with the human and financial cost and damage they wrought on us. Better leadership, better understandings of politics, better understandings of American history, better understandings of contemporary America would prevent that. But as Thomas More said, I show you the times. I'm Seth Liebson. We'll be right back. As I was saying in my monologue, by the way, if you ever miss it, you can always go to 960thepatriot.com. Everything we do on this show is there for you anytime you want. I was asking, can any man get a fair trial in this society? And I think the answer to that question, to the extent of that answer, defines just how committed to justice we as a society are, how committed to truth, how committed to reason we as a society are. And I was thinking about that famous image of Lady Justice and how so many people like to comment on her being blindfolded. And it's not quite right, because the odd thing about Lady Justice, going all the way back to its origins in Roman mythology, is she didn't always have a blindfold, and sometimes she's indeed depicted without it. Though the one thing she always had was a sword. And what happens to a society, I like to ask, where the sword is unleashed indiscriminately and the blindfold is forgotten? Or more important, what happens when the sword is unleashed discriminatingly with the blindfold taken off, which is what happened here? That we would call a unjust society or a racist society. And if and only if fairness and equality and justice matter for just one side based on race and ethnicity, then you don't have anything like fairness or justice. It used to be called injustice. So today, thanks to the media and the Democratic Party, it is actually true that what they called for has become our coin of the realm: no justice and no peace. You can thank the Democratic Party for that. And you can thank the most fraudulently used phrase they have foisted on us, that of social justice, for it is neither. What is true, what you do see, is that demagoguery and false narratives and lies, they can lead to death. They can lead to killing. I give you what happened in Wisconsin this weekend. You tell enough lies, you simply won't recognize the truth anymore. We should have learned that a long time ago. We'll have to relearn it again at our peril now. Until tomorrow, God bless you all. Class dismissed.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.